Jobs on Country and Bus Crash Guilty Plea. Hello, I'm Stephen Clark with the latest from NIRS News. An Indigenous recruitment specialist says creating more jobs for Indigenous people on country is key to improving employment rates. In March, the national unemployment rate was 3.9%, but for Indigenous people it's 12%. In 2022, Japanese company Fujitsu opened a call centre in the Aboriginal community of Cherbourg, about 275 kilometres northwest of Brisbane. Director of First People Recruitment Solutions, Shane Canelli, told National Radio News it's had a positive effect on the local town.
They trained up local Aboriginal people to be able to be the front line on their call centre to take calls as required. So it's really some leadership is needed by not only our government organisations but also our corporates to look at how we can provide these pathways for our people.
The bus driver responsible for the 2023 fatal crash in the New South Wales Hunter Valley has pleaded guilty to a range of dangerous driving charges. Brett Andrew Button was charged over the crash in June last year, which killed 10 people and injured 25 others. He was charged with a total of 89 offences. However, the Newcastle local court has heard today all 10 of his manslaughter charges have been withdrawn and dismissed. He's pleaded guilty to 35 charges over the crash and will be sentenced at a later date. The New South Wales government says it's considering pulling its funding of public libraries in a Western Sydney shire after it banned same-sex parenting books. The Cumberland City Council last week voted 6-5 to rid its library service of same-sex parent books or materials. Councillor Steve Christou says the move came after members of his community raised concerns about children finding a book called Same-Sex Parent in a library. State Government Minister Ryan Park told the ABC the council isn't focusing on core issues.
I think it's a pretty sad day when local government is worried about banning books. I think the community and ratepayers out there would want them to concentrate on road rates and rubbish, making sure their local parks are clean, tidy and well kept. That's what I expect of my local council.
We'll have more after this.
Hey, you mob, it's Naomi Moran, proud Bundjalung woman and CEO of The Koori Mail, our 100% Aboriginal-owned and operated newspaper. Since 1991, we've been a respected source of news and information for our people. Whether it's an important community event or a focus on issues that matter, we've got you covered. So subscribe today by visiting koorimail.com. The Koori Mail is proudly the voice of Indigenous Australia.
Program sponsor.
Indigenous electronic duo Electric Fields have failed to make it into the grand final of the Eurovision Song Contest in Sweden. Rihanna Patrick has more.
The first semi-final of the world's biggest song competition had everything it's become famous for, from soaring high notes to pyrotechnics galore and even a giant denim egg. Australia found itself in a pool with favourites Croatia's Baby Lasagna, which bookies are tipping to take out the competition. Electric Fields put on a stellar performance, complete with the first Yidaki to make it to the Eurovision stage in front of an estimated TV audience of 167 million viewers. But it wasn't enough to secure the vote. It's needed to get the duo a spot in the final.
They should be so proud of what they have brought to the Eurovision stage.
The second semi-final takes place early Saturday morning, Australian time.
Reserve Bank Governor Michelle Bullock says the board is conscious of Australian households who are struggling under inflation and past interest rate hikes. The RBA yesterday afternoon held the cash rate steady at 4.35% for the third time this year. But Governor Bullock has warned inflation is still high and is only gradually declining. She says this is having an impact on low-income households and household consumption figures more broadly.
We also know that there are households who are really struggling to make ends meet. These people don't have a lot of extra savings. They might be working a second job, cutting back on discretionary items, or making difficult decisions such as putting off medical appointments.
Tasmania's Museum of New and Old Art has appealed a tribunal ruling ordering the gallery to open its ladies' lounge to men. The lounge was, in April, found to be discriminatory by the state's civil and administrative tribunal after a complaint by a man who was refused entry to the exhibit. The tribunal ruled Mona had 28 days to stop refusing entry to the lounge to people who didn't identify as women. The gallery has now appealed that decision in Tasmania's Supreme Court, saying conceptual art should have the right to make some people feel uncomfortable. To stay up to date with NIRS News, follow us on Twitter or Instagram, like us on Facebook, and visit our website at nirs.org.au. And that's the latest national Indigenous news.
Join us at Wuchopperen Health Service for an enlightening dialogue with Mick Gooder, a proud Gangaloo man and esteemed thought leader. Mick will delve into one of the most critical conversations of our generation, life following the Indigenous Voice to Parliament referendum. The event will be held on the 14th of May at 5pm at our Manoora campus. For more information, visit our website or call us at 4080 1000. Remember, together we can keep our generations growing strong.
Station sponsor.
What do you want to do for the rest of your life? Nobody knows that. Question is, what do you want to do next?
Practical courses.
With flexible choices.
Start a diploma to start earning faster.
Open up pathways to a uni degree. Do what feels right for right now at TAFE Queensland. Apply now. RTO 0275 PRV 13003.
Station sponsor.
Hey, Bill and Gunner, and welcome to Black Law Tribal Edition. Murumu here with you today with the Attorney General Ganyara Yalmaburra, and wherever you are listening to this program, I hope you're doing well and learning a lot about our life and the universe and sovereignty. Today we'll be talking about a few things. Ganyara, thanks for making the trip down from the Tablelands. I think let's begin with some controversy as usual. You didn't do mob love fishing. But there was an interesting story coming out of the Northern Territory there. A young fella in Katherine caught $1 million fish. It seemed like a fantastic dream come true.
Well, I reckon it was for the young fella, eh? You know, the Aboriginal people had a pretty tough life, you know, and it was an Indigenous lad that caught this fish. And it's been, 9 years of, I think, they've had a tagged fish out there. If you catch it, this tagged fish, you get $1 million. And it was good for him, you know. They've all had a pretty hard life, these kids over there. So when he caught that, I thought, yeah, beauty, you know, good on you for having to go, getting out of town, going, doing that. And it was a really good, warm story.
Well, most people thought it was, but unfortunately, Sky News, Stefanovic, not Carl, the other one,
Peter,
his brother, I think he's a former Channel 9 Los Angeles or North American correspondent, etc. In a surprising, really, a turn of events during an interview, basically did a backflip on the young bloke, and rather than seeing it as a good news story, started turning it into a negative one by questioning his mistakes of the past about stealing a car and these types of things. And I thought it wasn't the right place to put to air that, but unfortunately, and a lot of other people did either as well. But what did you think?
Well, look, I feel it was a character assassination right from the very start. You know, it appeared to be a from Sky News, of course, which is a rather supremacist, white supremacist view, opinion. That's the news piece for the white supremacist movement. By the looks, you know, those who are have the advantage of being white, so you can't have an Aboriginal lad having a go and making a buck out of it. So that was a character assassination. But I'll always say this: let those who are perfect cast the first rock. You know, I bet you Peter Stefanovic hasn't done nothing wrong. Of course, he must be the most perfect person on earth, because why would you cast a rock? But to really take it to this boy, and it was a very, very poor piece of journalism by the very basic way he asked questions, which only required a yes or no answer, you know. And as a young fella there, how would he answer some of these questions, you know, that were... He could have spun the story around, but it turned out to be a really... I reckon it was a mudslinging thing to tarnish this boy. Now, the boy might have done some crime, but he said, you know, but they actually got onto the owner of the bike. Apparently, he stole a motorbike. And they got on to the owner of the motorbike, said, no, he let him off. He didn't want to press charges against him. He wanted this boy, this young lad at the time, to have a go, just to feel as though he wasn't going to be hammered and bashed and taken, you know, let's put him in the prison system for the rest of his life.
And I haven't seen the interview. I'm not going to play it on here, but He admitted to it. That's what I read, and that's a sign of an actual honest
repentance.
Someone with but not only that, with someone who's not afraid of facing the past. Unlike Australians, some Australians who are living in denial about the greatest fish ever caught, called this continent, and that's you know, unjust enrichment and all these kinds of things. I mean, look, we could point the finger, but it doesn't really help. And I don't think, you know, that type of negativity by Stefanovic was you know, appreciated by a lot of people after reading all the social media comments, especially.
Well, look, no, it was a terrible thing to do to the young lad. Now, the question I ask, that might be just enough to tip the lad back over the edge again, back into a life of crime. Will Stefanovic take responsibility for that? Will Sky News take responsibility for that? Who's going to face the liability should they push this young lad? Now, look, he said he'd done wrong. The boss that he worked for said, yeah, he'd done wrong, but I'll give him a go. You know, I haven't pressed any charges against him. Which is all a sign of good faith. You know, the lad said, yeah, I took it. And the boss said, okay, see, and you admitted to that. That's good. That's how you should be. You admit to your wrongs. But then to have this, you know, personally bought online live and grilled, you know, and roasted and really made to look like Aboriginal. That's how the white fellas look at this. All Aboriginals are bad. You know, the colour politics that play out, the racist comments of someone like that is absolutely a disgrace.
Yeah, it should have been me that caught that fish and not him. And, you know, he's just a no good, rotten kid, whatever it is. You know, this is the type of behaviour and thoughts of some people, I guess, around the place. It was similar to, I remember the backlash there from the media also, when there was the compensation for the stolen wages stuff on Palm Island, and everyone got some sort of compensation for it, and you know, in the court of law in Australian world, fairly. And of course, I think it was one of the local media outlets here doing a big story on how come, you know, they're buying all these boats and cars, and you know, I don't think any of the people that are selling them were complaining at all.
Absolutely not. And this is the thing. The stolen wages, what was actually taken from the Indigenous people at the time, you've got to ask the question, what was going on? They actually wanted these people to be enslaved to the white supremacists, to build it up, to give the Australia the advantage over the Aboriginal people. You know, what a pretty low-life bunch the white supremacist movement has been when you think about it. And that reminds me of, you know, that comment by Pauline Hanson the other day. As you said there, they're all fighting over the spoils here now, you know. They're freeloading on the backs of the Aboriginal people, these freeloading rent-free wannabes, these Australians, pay the rental, you know, as they say. Go and read Article 28 of UNDRIP. Go and, you know, give the place back to the Aboriginal people or pay them for the place, one or the other. Don't be freeloaders and bludgers, you know. Pauline Hanson telling the other senator of Pakistani origin to piss off, you know, pack your bags and go. Give us a break, Pauline. You know, this is what I'm saying. This is this white supremacist movement to which Pauline Hanson, Senator Hanson, is part of with Peter Stefanovic. I didn't see Stefanovic criticising Pauline for telling the Pakistani woman, because she's brown, by the way. I see they didn't tell her to criticise Pauline. You know, that was wrong, and we're going to do a character assassination on you, Pauline, because you said to someone to piss off out of here. That's a place that doesn't belong to you. Hang on, Pauline. None of this belongs to the Australians. They haven't paid the bill yet. I wonder what they're talking about treaty for.
Yes, it's an interesting world we live in, where I think that obviously with the what we're doing here, we're trying to turn away from all that nonsense about hate and payback and all that kind of retribution and things like that. I think it's a really waste of energy, to be fair, which is why I think the SYG, the Unity Government, and the elders, when they put that together, was like, you know, it was the best model was to actually let's look after the place, let's look after everyone. You know, it's not about money. These are the really important things, I think, from our point of view, which is why we love doing what we're doing, by the way. So, yeah, I think if we to look back at these things, it is childish, it is divisive, and that's what that world is all about. It is about getting one over your neighbour, and if they're a different colour or they speak different languages or whatever it is, you're better than them.
It's an adversarial world, and that puts it mildly. Even the court system, the whole lot's about adversarial opposition to each other, you know. As you said there, and this is the thing, what Yidinji are doing, this is the most important thing, what Yidinji are doing is trying to make this inclusive for all people. And yes, that does include Pauline Hanson. You know, she's telling everyone else to bugger off to back to where they come from. Hang on, Pauline, we'll even give you a break and let you be here on our country. Why, you know, why should we have to kick all the Australians out? Why should we be as low as the Australians when we got every right to chuck them out if we want or ask them all to leave? The practicality is very low, but we got the right to do it theoretically, but we're not going to do it. We're not going to go down that road. We're trying to build something for everyone. And this is something that part of the Yidinji Treaty model is whoever we do a deal with will have to look after their citizens, you know. So if Australia starts to go rogue, we do a treaty with Australia and it starts to go rogue and hammer its citizens, or it lets one class of citizens dictate to another class, we'll have to pull it into line through the terms and conditions of a treaty. This is so basic, so simple. We're all humans, and this is something that most people forget. We're all humans together. And if we go back far enough into the apical ancestors, I bet you we'll come to the same place, you know, as someone from America or someone from South America or someone from Africa. If we go back far enough, we will come to the same place.
Yes. Well, you know, there's been a lot of truth-telling going on, or versions of the truth, let's say. But one of the interesting articles that you'll find that is quite common around the world is this one from the Sami. The Sami are in the Scandinavian region, the indigenous people from Sweden, Finland, Norway, etc. And there's an article in The Guardian there that's looking at a lot of collective trauma. It says here the heading, Sweden's indigenous people, Sami people, speak to a truth commission. So it seems like this is happening all around the planet. And I find that very interesting that there's some sort of process going on. And basically here, these Sami people were children that were put into institutions, sounds familiar, and the Swedish church has since admitted that it was racist. And obviously this particular individual is now 76 years old and has been able to share his experiences with the Swedish authorities as part of a long awaited Sami Truth Commission. The Sami people, I've actually lived with the Sami people in a traditional tent and ate reindeer and all that kind of stuff many, many years ago. And they're very, very distinct people, different features from the Swedish mob. And the Sami are recognised as one of Sweden's official national minorities, and they are the only recognised Indigenous people in the European Union, with roots going back between 3,000 and 10,000 years old ago, rather. So there's a lot of history there, a lot of violence. But my point being is that this has been perpetrated on a global scale, and the tit for tat, you got $1 million fish and I didn't, and you stole, and you're Aboriginal, whatever it is, it's happening all around the globe, because that copy and paste type of spirit went all around the world. And that spirit is an evil one, as the church admitted to being racist. But I think what I'm trying to introduce here is that even with all these truth commissions, it's not the truth. It's not the absolute truth, or it's not true. Because everything has to happen outside of that commission. It's good evidence and all that kind of stuff, fair enough. And, you know, we can see some excellent evidence being put forth in the Uruk Commission down in Victoria. But it's all about capacity. This is what you've got to realise. You can tell that story in there, but it's out of that place that you've got to act as a sovereign nation, for example.
The Uruk Commission is a really good one. It provides a lot of good evidence. If you go back to last year, the Euro Commission, when they brought the Commissioner for Victoria Police into play. He came in and made a comment that that their group, the Victorian Police, acknowledged that the sovereignty of the Indigenous people of Victoria, or the Indigenous people in the geographical location everyone wants to call Victoria, has not been ceded. The sovereignty is still there. It's unceded, unextinguished. And even the police now can recognise it and see it. And it's just like everything, it's telling the truth. But if you're going to have this sovereignty, the sovereignty that coexists, as they say in the Uluru Statement, coexists outside of Australia, coexists with, you know, it's not part of Australia, but it's there beside it. You've got to go back to it. You've got to go back and exercise that sovereignty, go back and assert that sovereignty, which is what Williams and Davis talk about in their books. You've got every right to go and do this if you so choose. Article 5 of UNDRIP, you know, this is what you're talking about globally around the world. The Sami people go into that Sami parliament as Swedes, as Swedish citizens, as Finnish citizens, as Norwegian citizens, but they got their right to go back to their true sovereignty and be not a Swedish citizen or a Finnish citizen or a Norwegian citizen. They got every right to go back there to be Sami, and that's where they should be, just like what Yidinji is doing. It's all about capacity. Remember, this is something most people forget. We're only human beings. We're a species of animal called human beings. And we've got the ability to think in our mind and to create this this fictitious world, the paper world, called citizenship and being, where's the Commonwealth of Australia? You know, Yuval Harari got it, you know, the Israeli scholar got it really right when he said the US is just a fiction. It's just a story. Just as human rights are a story, they sure are, because when you cut, as you said, when you cut a human open, you don't see any human rights in there. You see kidneys and livers and lungs and stuff, but you don't see human rights. So, you know, we got every right to go and participate in a certain society through a thing called a citizen, a legal identity, a person. So when we participate in there, we actually give body and substance to the person. And when they said Yidinji have its continuing sovereignty, when they said the Uluru Statement said, you know, coexisting sovereignty, we still own the place under our law, and we were first in time, and we're still here, we haven't gone away, and Australia hasn't extinguished our stuff, go back there. Go back to your sovereignty. Start to form your proper government. Start to form all the mechanisms in accord, by the way, with modern standards. We don't have to go back to dugout canoes and using spears and boomerangs. We can go back and use all the modern things, including the paper. Remember, the pen is mightier than the sword. We go back to paper and create the proper instruments of government, something that the West can see, and write it in English, because that's all this lot can see at present. Maybe if we do a deal with China, we'll have to write in Chinese, or we'll have it translated into Chinese. But this is our ability to go and do this stuff. It's our right to do it. You know, there's nothing to stop us from reasserting our sovereignty, which is what the real issue is that facing Australia, including Senator Hanson. Now, if you go back to that bit of a story about the young fella caught the fish, you know, and I say good luck to him. At least he's got some go in life. He's got a leg up. But there was a federal court determination going back, and I think it was 92 or 99, I just can't remember exactly, where the justice who presided over that case, I think it was Nalrymple versus Thompson, said that that the Indigenous people were so disadvantaged because of what's happened to them. They've been taken away from everything. They've been dislocated from their world, and they suffer all the bad stuff that white fellas don't. And this young fella has a bit of a go, and then a white fella tears him down. That's disgraceful and terrible, especially in a country, by the way, that they haven't acquired properly. And this is what we come back to the truth all the time. The truth is that you've got sovereignty sitting over there to go back to, yet no one wants to. They get a few little beads and trinkets and want to stay in Australia. Go back and assert your sovereignty. Not for the money. There is no money over there. You're not going to get the whole world paid for, you know. You're not going to get planes with gold taps. That's one thing for certain. But what you're going to do is get the ability to now set the future for the grandkids, the great-grandkids, to be able to stop this rot like Stefanovic. Not the Sami way. Remember, the Sami is the Sami parliament is a toy telephone. The toy telephone, by the way, that's not us saying that. That's a professor of law from South Africa saying that.
Yeah, I mean, it's the same as ATSIC, really. If they don't like it, they can dismantle it. That's what's different. The Yidinji government is made by the Yidinji elders, and you can't dismantle it. Australia can't dismantle it. So this is the whole point. If we create it, we can dismantle it. If it's a law to do with the like postal service and things like that, we can change those laws. And if we don't want a postal service, we can remove that legislation if we want. So this is the whole difference. Whereas in Australia, you are subject to that law, and rightfully so. I don't have an issue with that. I think it's really important that order is there, and for the peace and good governance of nations. That's what the written law is for, is to help people get along and not be racist and get on these TV shows and start bad mouthing black fellas. So, you know, this is the thing now. Like, I really do struggle sometimes to keep saying this same message. We've been talking about it for 10 years nearly, about going back to your law and with the elders. It sort of happens all organically inside of Australia as well, but it's just a different way of thinking, doing the same work, but just building this other world back to its rightful position.
Oh, absolutely so. And this is what we should be doing, is to go back to there and understand what's going on. People really struggle with this stuff. I don't know why. I think it's got a lot to do with keeping people uneducated, which is what appears to be with Pauline Hanson and her crew and all her ilk that are saying, you know, telling this Pakistani senator to bugger off back to where she come from. I don't know if Pauline understands. If I went and asked her, how did you acquire the place, would she fully understand what the truth of the matter is? I don't think she would. There's a lot more to all this than meets the eye, and we're coming back to try and help people to do this, to do it properly for the benefit of everyone, including all Australians, if Australia wants to do a deal, wants to do a treaty. We've been offering this now for, 7 years? It's been a while. It's coming up to the stage where they have to do something sooner or later. I know we're a bit too far advanced for most of the Australian world. The leadership of Australia is struggling, but they are rushing things through to try and get a change to legally recognise us, to be able to do a deal with us. There is some big stuff happening behind the scenes, but ultimately they're going to have to come to the table. Otherwise, it might be too late for Australia.
You're listening to Black Law Tribal Edition right across the planet today, thanks to the Yidinji Broadcast Service and our friends at Bumba 98.7 FM, who also broadcast inside of Australia and on the Yidinji Territory. And if you're listening inside of Australia, it's via the National Indigenous Radio Service. We'll be back after the break.
Hey, yo, this is Baker Boy, and you're listening to Radio BBM 98.7 FM.
Yeah, welcome back to the show. Some interesting developments for people who are following what the Yidinji Nation is doing. And the Bank for International Settlements is the bank that controls all central banks around the world. It is going through a lot of changes with the digital money and the future of money, for example. And as the treasurer, you have some vested interest in this, Ganyara. I think there's going to be some interesting developments happening in the near future. Obviously, Yidinji is one of very few nations with a digital wallet that has a central bank digital currency and a digital ID in the same app. Europe doesn't have that. America doesn't have that. China doesn't have that. I think the banks are the ones that operate the digital wallet, and the governments usually own the persona or the citizen's ID. And sometimes there's a bit of, let's say, friction there as opposed to who wants to control what part of it. Whereas the Yidinji Nation, in its move to have some sort of frictionless transition to this, said let's put it all in one app to make it easier, because, you know, that's how Bummer is. But anyway, the Bank for International Settlements has just recently announced, or updated really, Project Mandala. It's an interesting project. It's shaping the future of cross-border payments compliance. So just bear with me for a little while as I read this. Basically, the Project Mandela explores the feasibility of encoding jurisdiction-specific policy and regulatory requirements into a common protocol for cross-border transactions such as borrowing, foreign direct investments or payments. So basically, this looks at a proof of concept and the Reserve Bank of Australia and the Bank of Korea are one of some of the partners there. And this has been updated recently. Basically, as of May 2024, an interim project has just been announced. This is last week. Project Mandela has developed a second use case that investigates streamlining compliance processes related to cross-border financing of capital investments involving corporations in Korea and Australia. In parallel, the project explores compliance monitoring to show the usefulness of the Mandela Protocol for central banks. The new use case seeks to automate mandatory approvals and reporting requirements to the relevant authorities in both Australia and Korea, in addition to concurrent sanctions, screening and compliance checks against capital flow management measures in Korea. So it's an interesting thing. Obviously, our digital app and our central bank digital currency has South Korean technology behind it, and obviously we're on the Australian continent, but there's no treaty. So, you know, what did you think of that?
There has to be a mechanism in place to start to allow the exchange of digital currencies. There really is, and it is a big thing to undertake. It's not just a simple matter of creating an app and just doing this, and it all just happens and flows seamlessly. They're running a lot there. As you said correctly, Yidinji has its own digital currency that's operational, by the way. And I'll say this. We're the only one that's fully using it at this stage, so our citizens can go and use our digital currency against their digital app in their digital wallet, you know, so you can go and buy a cup of coffee with a Yidinji dollar and it will come out of your wallet, your identity. It's completely divorced of Australia. There is no connection to the Commonwealth of Australia at all in any way, shape or form, which means there's things like tax laws, Australian tax laws, I've got nothing to do with this. There is no Australian GST component to our dollar. So when you buy the coffee, there is no GST attached to it, which is an important thing, by the way. Same with cross-border stuff. Now, there are a number of countries that are starting to look very serious at it, and we've actually had a few last year said, yep, you bring your Yidinji dollar to us and we will accept it over the border, which is a big, big thing. In a couple of the South American countries that are very... not Western friendly is the best way to put it. They all said, bring it over and we will start to use it. We'll trade with use product or whatever it may be. So that's a big step. Now with our South Korean technology, and actually I think one of the developers of the Yidinji stuff has been having input into the Bank of International Settlement, which is very important to us. I don't think he's a stupid bloke. So, you know, if he's having input into there, and he's assisting us with our stuff, I think our stuff pretty well on the right track, you know. But remember, this is our currency under our legislation, for our citizens, not for Australian citizens, not for Australian legislation. They can't control us. Remember the coexisting sovereignty. That's an important thing. When they said sovereignty coexists, now we've got the government back. And one thing I will say with developing your government, if you develop it properly, in accord with the modern protocols of what you would consider a government, and ours is a democratic government, that's one thing for sure, you will be accepted around the world as being one of the nice guys. You know, you will be accepted as being legitimate and above board. Unlike Australia, which is having issues of proving its acquisition of the place, our currency is backed by our resources, backed by our value of Yidinji Nation, of the territory. And this has massive ramifications, and this is why I gladly see the, as I said earlier, what's the cause, what's the reasoning for Mandela the Project Mandela to be between Australia and South Korea, for example?
Well, maybe it's a race, because I think the tribal nations, not just Yidinji, I mean, this is have a sovereign line of credit. Who wants it? The BRICS nations only just last week also announced that they are willing to accept cryptocurrencies and other digital money in opposition or as an alternative to the US dollar. Now, up until now, we've been very, very friendly with the, you know, let's say the Bank for International Settlements camp. But at the end of the day, you know, you're going to have to put a foot in each camp to say, well, which one really wants us and who loves us? Because the point being is that the Commonwealth of Australia has not been under Albanese's reign and everything else, has been... we've got a young fellow here. Hello. You know, Penny Wong, the Foreign Affairs Minister, and all those, you know... I mean, she won't talk to us, Albanese, but Andrew Bolt will talk with me. He'll text me sometimes too, asking questions. So it's interesting all about that. But what I'm trying to say is that build it and they will come. Now, I'm not, you know, I gave it all away. I'm not really interested in money, all right? But the thing is that the Yidinji Treasury and the Yidinji Bank and the Yidinji Dollar is there for the nationals and the citizenship, right? So, you know, Queensland's struggling with the homeless situation. There's a housing shortage in Ghimoy. There's everything going wrong. And so this is where we would prioritise any expenditure to do with social services. There shouldn't be one poor family on the Yidinji territory. You know, we've got people coming here from Karanda and stuff asking for IDs and letters of support for housing and all that kind of stuff. We've got people from down in Gordonville, Mullumbarra area asking for assistance, and we're getting every Tom, Dick and Harry, white fella, black fella, you name it, coming in here, can I get an ID because I don't want to wait, go to Centrelink and wait 5 hours. So these are the things that we're doing really, really well, but with a fully functional cross-border digital currency, you know, this will be one of the greatest charities on the planet.
It will be, and this is the problem with Australia at present. The unipolar collective Western world is coming to an end. You know, this is how they used to, the manifestation of colonialism, call Australia, call it New Zealand, whatever. This is how they control the place, by giving the little crumbs off the plate to the Aboriginal people. Or now the white fellas are starting to feel the pain. You know, they're starting to withdraw the cash flow out of society by putting interest rates up. That's dragging money out. And then that's where you get this cost of living crisis. You know, things are going through the roof. You can't just print this money up based on nothing, you know. So when you start printing up I see they're going to give everyone in Queensland a free power bill for next quarter. Hang on a sec. That's inflationary. You've just given everyone all this money to go and spend, which then... This unlimited amount of money is going to go and chase these limited goods. And, you know, let's have a look at the money world, you know. The price of something is worth what people are willing to pay. If you've got all this money, you're willing to pay a bit more than your neighbour to get something the adversarial world, I'll pay a bit more. That drives inflation. So this is what putting the price up, you know, or I like to call it devaluation. People don't understand the value of money. But yes, we can. Our dollar is based on the value of our asset, of our resources, of our carbon, for example, of our fish out the front, our gold in the hill. You know, we are a resource-backed currency. You know, this is the Yidinji dollar. And people are starting to realise that as the unipolar world goes down and becomes the multipolar world, and I'll tell you now that a number of countries are really buying up gold in big, big amounts. China, for example, has just been, the Reserve Bank of China has just gone nuts with buying gold, which drove it well up over the, you know, here over the $3,500 mark an ounce, you know, Aussie that is. So why did it go up so much so quickly? Because these big countries are starting to buy it up. And, you know, the Russian ruble is based on, you know, its oil and its natural resources, its oil. The petrodollar is done, it's dead. You know, the unipolar world of the US dollar to which Australia wants to participate, it's over. The world is coming to an end for this unipolar world where the white supremacist could control the indigenous people here, for example. Those days are over. We're developing our currency ahead of this to make sure that our people do not starve or face the homeless issue.
Well, that's right. So, I mean, it's taken a long time and we're not, You know, we've still got a lot of work to do, mind you, but it's good that MetaMui, which is the South Korean company, is a one of 12 advisors to the Bank for International Settlements. Now, to get at that level of banking and advising international banking system is pretty good, and that's where the Yidinji Nation is. So when people start talking about $1 million fish and complaining about it, you know, this is where we don't listen to those things, you know, and unless it's in a critique or a human interest level, which is, you know, it's wrong. As a young fellow, he's done well, and good on him, you know. He wants to help his mum and dad and his family, and that's a beautiful thing. And it's the same sort of concept behind our banking, right? So it's about helping each other, and that's a wonderful thing, as opposed to I'm going to keep it all and put it into a Swiss bank account and not give it to my brother who's hungry. You know, that's just wrong. So, you know, I want to say this, and what I'm going to say now is I'm going to have to be very, very careful, because just in the last few days I was part of an international meeting where the Yidinji Nation was offered $30 billion or access to $30 billion to develop its world. And it sounds good. They could have given us $100 billion, they said, but they said $30 billion should be enough. But just beware when the Greeks said, you know, bear gifts, because the catch was that you had to pay it back. Not only that, there was a percentage attached to that. Now, if you're saying that to other tribal nations, here, have some money, and then they take that money, their great-grandchildren and their children after that are going to be in debt for a long, long time, because who knows what these sharks do. They give you money and they get their mates to undermine that nation and then put them in a really, really vulnerable and risky environment where they can't pay it back. So these are the things now that, you know, we're used to that gammon story. We know that these people want to give, but they want to take more. And just be aware of that, you mob out there who are in this nation-building mode, that they're not your friends. You have to go and build it yourself. You're going to have to do the hard work. And guess what? The Yidinji Nation is doing the hard work, and we give it to you for free. And that's the difference. But even then, these nations, they still want it on a silver platter, some of them. And that's to their downfall. The lender, the borrower is slave to the lender. Remember that. Always. Ganyara.
There's a lot of stuff out there about the economic assassins. Be very wary of those people who come along, you know, as you said, bearing gifts, you know. Here's all this money. Now, say you borrowed the $30 billion.
It's under the pillow.
Oh, well, that's why you got a crook neck today.
You're sitting
it?
Down.
You know, it's this craziness of that. You borrowed it, what sort of dollars? US dollars? What if the US dollar goes down the gurgler, or it's Aussie dollars and it goes down the gurgler? All of a sudden you've got to give back 10 times the amount. You know, maybe you've got to give back $300 billion and that interest, you know, compounding on that. And maybe you run out of money, or maybe the world runs out of money, because once you borrow $1 against another dollar, that means you've got a spare dollar. There's $1 in the world, but you've borrowed that $1 at interest. So now that you've got to create a bit more money somehow to pay the interest off on top of the dollar, so you can never, ever, ever catch up. And this is where the economic assassins come in. They come in and they entice you to borrow this. Oh, look, it's only $30 billion and your economy's worth $100 billion and. Look, we're on the edge of a world war at present, the way the world's going. The unipolar world is going down. We had the conversation with some other people over in Europe recently about the Yidinji dollar and how it's resource-backed. And, oh, this is a true, you know, a true sovereign currency. Of course it is. It's not backed by the Federal Reserve System anywhere, shape or form. This is backed off our resources. Anything to do with the reserve bank system of the world is based on what? What's the money actually based upon, or the currency? And I won't use the word money. It's currency. A fiat currency that's worth nothing. It's only your belief that there's going to be some value to it. So you borrowed $30 billion against your resources. You borrowed $30 billion of something that's of only a belief that there's some value to it. What if people give up on the belief that there's value to it? You're left with $30 billion that no one wants. You can't... Oh, but you've borrowed against your resources. All of a sudden, your resources belong to someone else. You've sold your soul to the devil.
That's right. And, you know, the Yidinji Nation's not for sale, not for $30 billion, not for $100 billion. All the money in the world will not buy the Yidinji Nation. And that's, you know, in the scriptures it says, what is it if a man gain the whole world only to sell his soul?
What value? What is the true value of a year's worth of drinking water? Good, clean, safe drinking water. Give me a dollar value on that. Because if you drink poison, poisonous water, you drink poison. It's a liquid. It may sustain you for about 3 seconds and all of a sudden you'll roll over dead. What's the good of money if you're dead? What's the good if you've destroyed your place? What's the good of your place if you've sold all your fish off? You can't get a feed there anymore, or you sold all your trees off. What's the value of the place? All for what? Some make-believe, valueless promise that this thing is going to have value in the future. Your land, your asset, your cold, hard stuff cannot be for sale for that gammon money.
Yeah, and I think it's really important that people realise what the value of things are. And once you work that out, what is the value of that piece of plastic identity, or that piece of paper money, or that paper, then you start to realise what is the value of your life, or your family, or what is the value of love, for example, or your children. It is way more than that. And that's the whole point about the true sovereign ability is knowing the value of things. And all persons and things are the property of the tribe. So when you realise that, you know, what else is there? What else do you need? You know, clothes, food and shelter. And you know, that's really important.
Well, let's look at the boy with the fish. Look what happened when that young fella, I wouldn't call him a boy, he's a young fella. He had to go and he caught a fish. All of a sudden, someone got jealous of it and had to take him down. See what I mean? The value of their make-believe money? It was just straight out, it was evil. What was done there was to take down the young fella because he got something of that make-believe world, something that maybe the white fella should have got. So you can see how this understand that the fish was worth far more to the family. They were going to eat it. It probably was worth far more, but you can't eat the money. But look, he done the right thing. But when you had this money, someone else wanted it. That's the adversarial world that we don't need to be in. We need to understand what the true value of stuff is. And that fish was worth far more than the $1 million. But he had to, you got to survive in this unipolar world at present.
Yeah, you got to walk in both worlds, as Dr. Yunupingu used to say. You're listening to Black Law Tribal Edition right across the planet. We'll be back after the break for some final comments.
Have you heard about the Territory Stolen Generations Redress Scheme?
It's for mob who were taken from family and community when they were kids.
The Stolen Generations in the Northern Territory, the ACT or Jervis Bay.
It's acknowledgement and payment for survivors to help with healing.
You can apply right now or just find out more. Call 1-800-566-111.
Or visit territoriesredress.gov.au.
Authorised by the Australian Government, Canberra.
Yes, well, it's gone back very, very quickly. The show must go on, but not for long. And Ganyara, I'm just thinking about the things we've talked about today. You know, for the love of money is the root of all evil, it says in the good book. And it's true. Money is just a thing, and it's there to use as a tool. And the Yidinji Nation is no different. It's a tool to make sure that people are being fed, they've got shelter, they're not homeless, for example, they're not starving. These are really important things. And you know, it's to be a father to the fatherless and to the orphan and to the stranger, to be a host for them and to be that they can feel part of something bigger. And that's exactly where we're heading with it.
Well, if you go back to the olden times, you know, go back a couple of hundred years, there was no such thing as money, where you traded you sold your soul. But everyone got fed. Everyone had a good life. You know, there was no shortage of food. There was no shortage of water. There was no shortage of housing. Everyone got to share together. So it was a the tribe was the collective. It was not like it is now. You'll starve to death. If you don't have the money, you will starve to death, literally, which is why there's rising crime rate and, you know, in-store crime where people go into the major cities, into the major supermarkets and eat. Eat while they're there because they're going to starve to death. You know, if they don't, if they're homeless outside and they've got no money, where do you get a feed in the city, for example? You can't, you know. So they go into these shops and actually take food off the shelf and eat it.
I've seen it happening down the road here, you know, it's a sad state of affairs because, I mean, they're probably people inside the state of Queensland government and the Australian government who really do have some goodwill, you know, in their heart. But it's a system that really needs an overhaul. And when it's run by people with negativity and adversarial, emotional influence, it can be really nasty. And, like, you know, I feel bad. I've got no money, you know that, but I feel bad walking past people and can't help them, you know. But when we talk to, you know, I won't say the elder's name, but this particular elder, you know, Guy Burrow's looking after him. He gave his last, he'll give his last loaf of bread to people. You know, this is the thing now. I've seen it happen a few times now. It's a beautiful thing to see such sacrifice and service and charity. And that's a beautiful thing. It's something that really resonates through this government. And we thank the citizens and the Nationals for being part of this story because they really want change too. And you know, the whole world is going to change very, very soon. And like you said, that unipolar world has to have some sort of peace and settlement and security, and it has to happen soon.
I feel it will happen soon, yeah, and that's the thing. As you were just talking about the elders giving, welcome to the Yidinji world. That's how it really is. That's how it always has been. It won't change. And, yes, the Aboriginal way of when one has a dollar, everyone has a dollar, is always going to be here. This is not the Western world where I have the dollar and you have nothing. You know, there's a lot of people out there that like to believe in that world. Good luck to them. I wish them the best of luck. But that's not my world. You know, my world is we share this joint together. Remember, we're all sitting on this little pale blue dot in the middle of nowhere, all 8 billion of us, and we're fighting and squabbling over some make-believe, fictitious, valueless thing called money.
Yeah, and you know what? It's come to me strong to say this, but it's about the family unit and the clan system that is under attack. This world, this modern world, has really gone beyond trying to do everything it can to destroy the clan system, the tribal system, the family kinship system. You know, oh, you can do this, you can do this when you're 16, you can do this, you're a woman, you can do this and this. It's fair enough. I don't have an issue with that. But if it's to the detriment of the family structure, which has worked on this continent for thousands of years. That's why kinship is so strong, is because of family. And you just look at it now because you have obligation. And that's how that system and this system works in a positive sense. The Yidinji Nation, despite its challenges and the impact of colonisation, the kinship system is still there. That sharing and caring mentality is on the whole continent. It's why Australia's peaceful. It's why the Aboriginal people haven't got machine guns and missiles and start shooting at Canberra. You know, it's because they know the value of peace. They know the value of family. But slowly but surely, this modern system is trying to undermine that so they can give you the $30 billion and you'll be the slave forever.
Yidinji won't take it, I tell you right now. While we've got people with a small amount of intelligence, it doesn't take much. While they're there as the elders, understanding what money really is, there is no amount of money can buy the place. It never will, and we'll make sure that the youngsters are taught the value of money. It's just a tool and nothing more and nothing less.
That's it for Black Law Tribal Edition. Gayabara Galanunda, may God's peace be upon you. That's the Yidinji name for God, Gayabara. And Galan means go, and Nyundu means you. And it's a wonderful thing to say that after every show. And we say praises to the boss in the almighty name of Yeshua HaMashiach, which means God saves. Gaiabara saves. That's what Jesus means. So if you want more information about Yidinji, you can go to yidinji.org, and there you'll see some of our interesting developments and news updates. But you can also contact us if you are interested in asserting your sovereignty for the tribal nation. And we wish you the best. We'll catch you next week.
Smooth sounds of Kawal G and my brother Jamal Yami from the Naughty North. You know that didn't come no alpha. He got his damn foot up on your neck, Jack.
Cause my jig is gonna bash in the dark. Some blacks done turn fashionable. Rich in a solar culture, but you know that this don't equal cash in a vault. Saturated with some dumb dogs, killing with no gun though. All these rappers, they are unknown. So tragic, so tagging all them junk dogs. Put the money on the racks,